Welcome to the Legal Mind podcast. I'm Gemma Matthews. Today I'm joined by Angus Lyon, counsellor, law care volunteer, author and non-practising solicitor. And we're going to be talking about talking and how it can help all of us. Hi Angus, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, hi.
Tell us a bit about your background professionally, your involvement with law care and how you ended up becoming a counsellor.
Bit about me. Okay, I'm retired from private practice. I was for quite a lot of years, about 35 years or so, a litigator, mainly civil litigation, mainly personal injury work. I was a partner in a practice, medium-sized practice in Suffolk, and started my training in London, worked for a bit in Cambridgeshire, then moved over to Suffolk in the mid-1980s. Law care volunteer, think I became a volunteer, must have been early 2000s, 2010 maybe. But in terms of being an active volunteer, since 2015. So okay. I've been on the helpline since then, and therapy. You asked about therapy. In 2006 it was, I took an introductory course for counselling, psychotherapy, at a local organisation, because at that time I was becoming, I suppose, increasingly interested in but confused by some of the problems that my injured clients were going through, particularly people who were having psychological problems following injury, maybe long-term depression, problems with chronic pain, post-traumatic stress, I suppose a number of labels that psychiatrists would give people. And I became interested in how their minds weren't working and what wasn't happening. So I think it was partly the interest in therapy was sparked by that. There were other things feeding into it. And then after I'd done an introductory course, I just got hooked on the whole practice of therapy and how we can listen to people and ask questions that we hope are helpful, and help people to find answers that are helpful and productive and helpful and healthful, I think.
In terms of lawyers and mental health and well-being, did you put those two things together early on? Because you talked about how it was your clients really that inspired you to kind of do the introductory course. When did you start to think about the mental health and well-being of lawyers particularly, and whether they had unique problems because of the profession?
Yeah, over the years, I've had lawyers who I've been supervising in my practice, and I've known of other lawyers who've taken their lives in other practices. I've known very, very stressed out barristers. I used to do advocacy on and off. And so I've seen other lawyers really go through the mill, supervising people in my own office and trying sometimes fairly incompetently to help them, and but hopefully to help them on the right way. And also the stuff I've gone through myself, sometimes very high levels of anxiety when particularly doing advocacy where I felt rather out of my depth. And I can remember what one hearing I was sent along to do on my own when I was a trainee, and I was probably only about 20 at the time, and sent along to the High Court to do an interlocutory hearing with a couple of very senior barristers on the other side, and floundering quite badly. That was I had the sort of training where I was thrown in at the deep end, so maybe that prepared me for some stuff, but it also probably softened me up for some other stuff. And I had a bad year in 2010. So many things went wrong, just one thing on top of another, and that was a particularly difficult year. So I think in terms of my practical experience of the enormous demands of practicing law on top of all the other stuff that might be going on in one's life, I think that yeah, that helped me to put both things together. I carried on working pretty much full time, but and also full time as a lawyer, but also part time as a therapist. So,
wow.
if I'd been advising myself at that time, I'd have told myself, I'd have sort of looked at myself incredulously and said, "You can't be doing all that. You're crazy."
We don't listen to our own advice, though, do we? Not all the time.
No, and you know, as lawyers, okay, so we're self-sufficient. We have mm-hmm. to be. We're independent thinkers, or we hope we are, and we have to be. We have to be absolutely, or we try to be meticulous in our research and in the way that we present our clients' arguments or our clients' case, whether we're contentious or non-contentious lawyers. We have to be able to have a capacity for self-judgment, self-awareness, but we've got to, yeah, I mean, it's necessary to a degree to be self-critical, to monitor what we're doing and how we're doing it, because we have to live up to others' expectations, clients' expectations, expectations of other lawyers. We have our reputations to maintain. If we are talking to a judge, then clearly it's the court's expectations. So we've got all that as a given. We've got to earn money. We've got to be productive. We've got to do the work. We've got to do it well. But also, with that, we have our own expectations of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those can be just a little bit unrealistic.
You talked about the mindset of lawyers there, which definitely contributes to sometimes poor mental health and well-being. But there's something also around the culture and practice of law, isn't there, that isn't particularly conducive to be mentally healthy sometimes. What do you think are some of the problems in the profession that you've seen that cause people to get stressed out or anxious?
I think it's the environment we work in. And it's the stuff that life throws at us.
Mm-hmm.
So the environment is, you know, it's going to be a stressful environment. That is an absolute given. Mm-hmm. If we're lawyers and we can't cope with sometimes huge amounts of pressure, then you know maybe we're not cut out for it. But no one is cut out for working 24/7, being on call 24/7, not having weekends, not having any me time, and continually being loaded with the pressure never being off. So, and it's like that. I mean, I know it's like that. I know from times in my personal experience, and particularly, and at the moment particularly, I'm taking calls from lawyers on the helpline. Particularly thinking back to last March, April time, I know that it is incredibly tough at the moment. And people working at home in isolation, not having the support from their colleagues and teams that they might otherwise have, difficulties with actually having effective supervision. People who are working at home, the parents who've got school kids,
mm-hmm.
or homeschooling, so having to compete with kids for broadband, make sure they get their homework done. You know, the workload, the actual workload, has, I think, for the vast majority of lawyers, has increased, and that's not necessarily the workload of putting the hours in and doing the productivity stuff and getting the bills out and meeting targets, but it's also the adjustments that we've had to make to working from home,
mm-hmm.
And the additional demands, and with all the COVID, people getting ill, friends and family, and losing loved ones, and it's not just the outward stuff, the things that are thrown at us that we have to deal with, but it's the way that we the way that we cope with that stuff, keeping a bit of peace of mind when the boy stood on the burning deck. You're keeping his mind and just standing there, realizing that you know, it's pretty difficult. So I think that the stuff around workload, the stuff around our sense of whether we're actually feeling in control or not, and I think we've lost so much if we're working from home, or even if we're going into the office on a skeleton staff because we have to be there. It just feels different. Some people feel like they're on a ghost ship.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a really, really, really uncomfortable experience.
How do you think talking can help people work through their problems in your experience on the helpline and also as a therapist? What difference can that make to people to just unburden themselves?
Well, I think it has benefits at lots of levels. At a very, very simple level, I would say once someone has plucked up courage to see a therapist, or once someone has plucked up courage to phone the helpline, normally there's a minute or so of sort of hesitation and uncertainty and just simple awkwardness, really. I don't know if I should be phoning. I don't know if you're the right people. I don't know. I don't know. That's okay. That's what we're here for. Just tell me what's on your mind and we can think it through. You let me know what's been going on for you. Everything you say to Law Care is in confidence. And if obviously if there's any safeguarding issues arise, then those are, that we talk those through. But that, in my experience, that virtually never happens, although it might. Being able to talk to someone and just have somebody else listen and bear witness to what you're experiencing can, I think, be therapeutic in itself. Knowing that you're talking to someone, maybe someone who's gone through similar difficulties themselves and can speak, or can not even speak, but can listen and empathize and say, I have a sense of what it might be like to be you and what you're going through. So just having someone listen, quite apart from thinking it through, I think another thing that is helpful is getting somebody else's take on it. When we're going through difficulties and we haven't spoken to a professional about it, we are inevitably trying to sort stuff out on our own. So we might have a word with a supervisor, we might have a word with a colleague at work or a friend, but having those informal conversations, unless we know that person really well, we don't want to burden other people with the depth of the problems we're going through sometimes. So I think just having that independent person, being able to give a different perspective and say, well, have you thought about it this way? And sometimes that can bring a greater sense of reality and control and clarity into the situation, which you just can't do on your own. Because, you know, there is so much. I was talking to someone a little while ago. I work as a long-term, called an open-ended therapist, so people come for as long as they want, but also it's a single session therapist, so I'll talk to people for an hour and a half, something like that. And I was talking to this guy, and the more he talked, the more strands there were, the more pieces of string there were feeding into this incredibly tight, tangled knot that had sort of worked it. And there was so much, and so really the single thing that we identified was him was, well, let's try and untangle this, let's just look, well, this is happening and that's been happening and that happened a couple of years ago, and what happened a few weeks ago may have resonated with that really difficult patch you went through a few years ago. Quite apart from going back into, you know, we don't have time to go back into you know, how we developed as little kids and what might have been going on back then. But just to get a handle, a more realistic, clearer perspective on what's going on for someone. And I think that can help as well. So it's a technical term would be triangulation. So you have the client or the caller and the volunteer. So that's two corners of the triangle. And then together, you look at the problem, you look at the issue, you look at or the problems, plural, and try and sort of clarify those. So you're both looking at the problem, and it's not I, the lawyer, am the problem. The problem is the problem, and we look at it together. And sometimes that fresh perspective can be therapeutic in itself, quite apart from advice and suggestions. And I mean, the Law Care website, and this is a plug, but it's, I mean, there's a lot of information on there, and there's a lot of help that people can get, maybe from family and friends, or things, simple changes, or maybe just having a word with someone in the office, someone who's been a bit unreasonable. People are under an awful lot of stress at the moment. So a lot of practical suggestions as well that we can help people think through.
Do you think lawyers as a group are generally willing to talk about mental health and wellbeing? Or do you think they find that very difficult?
I wouldn't sort of necessarily lump lawyers in. I mean, I think... friends of mine who are doctors, someone who's working in A&E at the moment, it's a pretty stressful time.
Yeah.
And sometimes doctors can, you know, because they're the ones who are the physicians, you know, they're the ones who are supposed to heal themselves. So, but yeah, I mean, it can feel for some like an admission of defeat. It can for some feel like they're giving in, that they're not being tough enough. And if they think people find out, you know, I've been talking to a helper, a counsellor, then, you know, there's the stigma that some people feel attaches to that. I think we all feel that because we all want to be independent and self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm just, as you asked that, I'm thinking of the lawyers who I've spoken to about stress and their experience of stress. And I would say, I think over the last few years, people have been more sympathetic to, and I'm talking very, very generally here, people in the office who are going through difficulties. I think there's a greater openness to talk about one's own well-being. And I think, and that's partly, lawyers like me who are a little bit, former lawyers or whatever, are a little bit long in the tooth. I think the generation, the stiff upper lip generation, kids of the people who are in the war, I think that's going. And I think the younger generations, certainly law students now, people in their 20s, 30s, I think far more open to and sympathetic about well-being. And to talk about their own mental health. And I hope that will continue. And I think it's inevitable that it will as the new generations become the older generations in law. I have seen more of a culture change, but it's gradual, but it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of us, there comes a time when the pressure just gets too much, and either we feel we're starting to crack, or we realise that something could go seriously wrong pretty soon if we don't talk to someone. And I think once that step has been made, once someone's found the helpline, or they've taken the time to research a few therapists, and they've emailed one, or they've phoned one, then once that step has been made, I think that's the hardest step. And I would say that from the lawyers that I've talked to who've been through difficult times, once that conversation starts, then you are having the dialogue, and stuff can happen, and stuff can be opened up and talked about and thought about and experienced. And that's the beginning of the recovery, I'd say.
What do you think are some of the risks of not talking, just sort of hoping things will get better on their own? Does that happen?
Yeah, because I've done it myself. I've done it myself for many, many years. And I think of people who experience high levels of anxiety. Basically, you know, try and sort it on your own. Sure. If you're in an area of law that you're finding really, really difficult, then maybe if it's available to you, maybe think about swapping to another area that may be less stressful. If you don't like advocacy, then maybe become a lawyer who is, you know, they talk about barristers are good in court and barristers are good on paper. Mm-hmm. And some barristers are terrified of going to court and talking to judges. I did a presentation a while ago to some chambers in London, and one of the QCs there said, I was walking down to court, to the Supreme Court, and every step I took from chambers down to the court, I felt like turning back to chambers. So just because you're at the top of your game, the top of your profession, doesn't mean that you cannot be very, very significantly affected by stress and anxiety. And some barristers are good on paper, they absolutely loathe going to court. But they're good at the research and they're good at the quiet stuff rather than the theatricals. So the stuff we can do ourselves, but there's sometimes we need to bring other people in to help. If you're being victimized or bullied, then absolutely no. I mean, you need to be talking to people. You know, again, plug phone law care. That's such a, I mean, the number of people that I've spoken to on the helpline who have been, or put it generally, supervised poorly or not supervised at all, or who have been victimized or singled out because it's convenient for someone who's, you know, for the office bully to find some scapegoat and get help. You know? So yeah, to a degree we can do it ourselves, but I think talking helps. And it may just be, you know, half an hour chat. That may just get things in perspective, and that might be good enough for now. I mean, it's an analogy that I sometimes use. It's like going to the dentist. You got toothache, you go to the dentist. All I want from the dentist is take my pain away. You know, do what you want, extract the tooth, fill it, whatever. Just take the pain away. And then you go to the dentist and the dentist says, well, a bit of work here, there's a bit of plaque here and you've got a couple of loose fillings. That, big deal. Just get rid of the pain. And that will do for now. And sometimes that's all it is. Just having a chat with someone for 20 minutes, half an hour can get a totally fresh perspective. And then sometimes carrying on chatting and using the opportunities to carry on chatting can be really helpful.
Are there any particular conversations that really have stayed with you without, you know, revealing too many details that you've had on the helpline or any clients that were lawyers?
A number of people have phoned up relatively recently working at home who have had very unreasonable expectations placed on them. And I can think of one person who was working in a very big firm, one person who was working in a very small firm, and both were having, I think, really the same problem, but in the scale of the organizations was very different. But essentially, not having the opportunity to bounce ideas and, you know, potential sort of legal interpretations or tactical steps that they had to take, not having the opportunity to bounce those ideas off the person working at the next desk or in the next room, relatively junior lawyers who were, because they were working at home, and I think both of these, I think, were in the first lockdown, so firms, organisations were fairly chaotic, some of them, some lots better than others. But essentially the principle was they weren't being supervised. They weren't being supervised adequately or at all. So they didn't have the opportunity to talk to the next person up in the chain of command, maybe head of department or section boss, who would have, they'd have been able to pop into their office and say, look, I've got this problem on a case. This, I think I could do A, B or C. I think I should do A, but you know, can you just kind of bounce it off you? Just that opportunity for the quick chat, it was taken away, and it was, and I think it still continues to be very difficult for some people who are working remotely. And that sense of responsibility, quite apart from having to do the work, having to put the hours in, having to do the research, having to have all the inconvenience of doing stuff online at home rather than online in an office where it's just easier and you've got the environment and maybe you've got more research tools and as I say, people, colleagues who you can have a quick word with. You've got all of that support and the sense of responsibility coupled with a sense of isolation. Also, and some people just coupled with this sense of feeling forgotten about. You've got to earn your beans, but you're not being helped in the same ways to do that. I mean, essentially, you may be expected to do the same job, but the demands, the internal, the inner resources that you have to call on to do that job are far greater. And so you know, exhaustion kicks in, and the sense, well, I'm in this on my own and I've got to make this decision, could be a lot of money riding on it, or it could be if it's care work, a little child's safety could depend on it. So huge decisions sometimes, which, you know, the burden is spread if we've got other people around us. And for the last, what are we now, 10 months, that's been a massive problem.
On that note, if there's someone that you're working with that you are worried about, you think they might be struggling a bit, what's the best way to sort of start a conversation with that person, especially if it's someone you don't know that well? Should you reach out to them?
Yeah, it's going to be different now, isn't it? That maybe someone who's in an office where the staff levels are much decreased, or you may pick up something. I think it's probably far harder to pick up something, let's say in a Zoom, you've got meeting on Teams or Zoom or something. And I'm involved, I live in near Southampton, and I'm involved with a counselling centre in the city down here. And we've talked about this on inevitable Zooms. And I'm also a member of Psychotherapy Society, which is separate. Anyway, I had a meeting last night about this. And it's the difference between working face-to-face with clients in therapy and working online. There's all sorts of adjustments. But picking up people's body language, picking up those clues that you might when you're in a... So you meet for a team meeting in the office, or you pop your head around someone's door and they're sort of quietly having an emotion and it's awkward. You see that, you pick that up. So I think at the moment it's far harder to pick up those clues from people to know that people, unless you know somebody really well, maybe you'll be, have sort of a private WhatsApp group or text or, so I think at the moment it's far harder. You know, it's always awkward. I mean, it's never not awkward. Whatever your relationship is, if you're a supervisor, then you've got a natural way in. You can say, look, I've noticed that things are difficult for you at the moment. Do you want to talk about it? And people generally, as long as they know it's in confidence, they know it's not going to go any further. And then you can talk about that. And if somebody needs some time off work or needs a bit of extra consideration, then that can be thought about and talked about. But the hardest thing is always, and this applies probably even more so when we're so many of us are working remotely, is just having that first thing and saying, I noticed something, didn't seem your usual self. You keep it really vague. Things okay? I'm happy to talk. I'm happy to listen. How's things at home? Because that can open up stuff. If they've got worries about kids or not having that natural me time when you're commuting to work, and it's all pretty full on. There's no, I think the division between work and home it can be really blurred at times. So we don't have that natural physical time distance between shutting the door at home, going from A to B, getting to work, getting to the desk and all of that. Yeah, it's just breaking the ice. I mean, that's the thing, how you break the ice, everything going okay. And then normally conversations will develop from there. Just ask, is it okay? And then and also be prepared to feel a bit uncomfortable about asking. because, you know, some of us find it easier. I think in a lot of offices there's quite often one person that I'm thinking of sort of medium-sized to smaller offices, but I guess it applies in larger offices as well. There's normally one person who is the natural person for someone to go to if they're going through a difficult time. And quite often it's not a partner, it's not a director, it's not a head of department, it's just someone who has got a natural warm empathic ability to listen. And you know, people they are those people, they don't make themselves those people, they don't have job descriptions, it's just someone who instinctively would go to rather than someone else to have a confidential chat.
Someone that's approachable.
As approachable and also, you know, can keep a secret.
Just thinking about the situation we all find ourselves in at the moment, which realistically is probably going to go on for at least another couple of months. How can we all keep positive and keep going? What's some of the coping strategies we can use when people might really be feeling thoroughly fed up with it now and very stressed, worried, anxious? How can they keep themselves well?
Very quickly, I would point anyone to what are called the 5 ways to well-being. So all they have to do is Google 5 ways to well-being. 10 years ago now, I guess, the government commissioned the New Earnings Foundation to do a study on basically what keeps people fit and happy. And they came up with 5 general areas of life where we can actually be proactive in keeping ourselves healthy physically and mentally. They're talking about mental health, really. And the 5 are connect, learn, take action, notice, and give. And briefly, that's so connecting, that's socializing, connecting with other people, keeping up your social life. And I know that's really, really difficult at the moment, but just be proactive in keeping those friendships and those relationships going. And we can't go out and have meals with people at the moment. We can't go down the pub. We can't, if we go for a walk, it's awkward and it's cold. But however artificial it feels, you know, Zoom people and speak to people. So keep on connecting with people. That is, learn, maybe take up a new hobby, maybe take up something different or resurrect an old interest that you've forgotten about, but something just makes life fun and interesting. And so learn something new or relearn something. I took up playing the ukulele in lockdown. I play bass guitar, so it's quite I tune it the same way as a bass guitar, but obviously it's quite a few notes higher. Anyway, so that's something I did. Take action, you know, just do physical stuff, get out and go for walks or do a bit of running or just make sure that you keep your body working. Take notice, which is, you know, going out for a walk and just listening to the birds. Well, not much bird song at the moment, is there? But mindfulness is all about taking notice. So, you know, mindfulness works, breathing exercises and mindfulness meditations work for some people and not for others, but it's about taking notice what's going on around us and giving something back to our communities, altruistic activity. So the 5 ways to well-being, I would say, are always top of my list for thinking about. And it's a useful checklist. And just very briefly on top of that, I think there are 3 other things. They were going to have the 6 ways to well-being, the 6th being eat well, but I think that was probably a bit too sounded a bit too naggy. they wanted to line it up with eating 5 a day. A lot of research saying if you've got good nutrition, and that's all the obvious stuff. You know, we're in January at the moment, so be careful with the booze, be careful with what you eat, and so don't keep off the keep off all the sweet stuff and eat healthily. But that, eating well, just making sure we look after ourselves. And also, I think there's a couple of others, getting enough rest. And I think that's absolutely key, because so many of us now, people being messaged and WhatsApped. I mean, I was speaking to somebody today, being WhatsApp at 11:30 at night and expected to respond or respond to something in the morning. And there is an increasing expectation to be continually available to people. So we need to be disciplined. We need to have boundaries. We need to basically be deliberate and intentional about taking time out for ourselves and resting. And that means time, literally time, where we block out the office and all the demands, and it's me time. And also sleeping well. And that's about, that sort of feeds into resting, but also making sure we give ourselves enough hours to sleep. Because if we don't do that, don't recharge the batteries. And then when I do that as a talk, I sometimes have the heavily copyrighted pictures of hangers, you know, the children's television program with little pink creatures up on
the moon. Yeah, I remember them.
Where it's been redone. So it's a mnemonic. So clangers, CLANG, connect, learn, take action, notice, give. That's the clang, ERS, eat well, rest and sleep. So that's 8 ways to well-being, which is more than enough. Anyway, so Google 5 ways to well-being. There's a load of really helpful practical stuff there. And it's, in a way, it's also obvious. There's no secrets there. It's all obvious. But if we put it into practice, we stand a far better chance of keeping well.
Thank you, Angus. That's so helpful. Where can people find you if they want to look you up online?
Restartone.com, RESTART-ONE.com. And that's a site I set up last year for work I do as a single session therapist, and there's blogs on there and writing about well-being. That's the main one. I'll give you that one.
Thank you. Thanks for listening, everyone. Please rate, review and subscribe. And remember, if you need support, you can call LawCare on 0800 279 6888, email support@lawcare.org.uk, or visit our website, lawcare.org.uk. Thank you.